Martin, Reel 16. Now, the next thing I think we want to look at is this patrol you did for the next time you went forward to the area to where you were acting as infantry, and you did a patrol. If you could set the scene of where you're, you started from, your Troop HQ and everything.
Yes. We were in a rowing house called Udalai, just below, just beyond Monte Penzola, and nearby was another ruined villa, a bit closer to Monte Penzola, Villa Budriola. That's right, Budriola. So now we went from this Udalai, our own house, at night time. I took about six men, including a lance corporal, who I ought to have known better was a chain smoker. But I didn't realise at the time how it would affect us. We left just after dark, and our instructions were to go to a house near the bridge, which was actually just on the German borderline. The enemy were in a house nearby, and they occupied some defence posts quite close to the big house. And my job was to try and find and mark maps where those defence posts were. We set off with the six men and the lance corporal, a corporal as well, and a signal sergeant. Well, now his job was to lay a telephone line to the house that we'd chosen. I worked out from the map the most suitable position, and it was on the western side, near the bridge, a row of houses which seemed to be independent, facing the road, with most of the village on the far side and just a bit further away. We arrived there, I suppose it would take us a little half an hour or more, probably three quarters possibly to get there. And we found that it was quite dark, of course. We could just see the silhouette of the row of buildings, and we just stopped and stood and listened for a moment. And we were hoping not to find any German patrols on their way out, because obviously they came in our direction as ours went in theirs. But we got there quite safely, and we stopped and listened and looked. We arrived at the customs of the dark after a while, and we saw the old buildings, and we went to the second from the end, which we thought would be perhaps the most suitable. We saw a little narrow footpath from where we were, on a narrow footpath going to the house, so we went over it through a sort of hedge of one of those ones, and across what was supposed to be garden, a bit of a wild area. Saw the house, the window was open, so we climbed in through the window, got inside, and stood again, silent, just get used to the A, the sound that might be about, and B, our eyes got used to the total darkness inside. Once we got used to it, we went through from the back to the front of the house and saw the main door, quite a large door, open onto the road. There was a room on the right which we didn't go into. But the stairs were in the hall, and we went upstairs. We went up as quietly as we could, although we got heavy army boots on. We went up reasonably quietly, got onto the first landing, and we went into a room on the right as we got to the top of the stairs. It was a dogleg stair, and we got on to the right, went in there, and just stood listening. Obviously, you get your bearing, because you can't see very much in the darkness. You rely on sound and hearing. We listened, there was no sound of anything, and we were just going to go upstairs, and we heard what we thought was sound down the road, coming up from a place called Tosignano and Fontana Lice, where we had been before. Well, we knew the Germans occupied Tosignano, because the infantry were having a battle in there, and we didn't quite know the situation, except that a number of infantry had been killed in the battle in the Tosignano, and as far as we knew, the Germans were still there. And their main road passed in front of where we were, so we got to be on the lookout. But we heard this noise down the road, and we listened for a moment, and sure enough, we heard marching feet coming along the road. Well, remember, it was pitch dark, at the tunnel on each side of the window, looking out down onto the road, and I stood back so that we were sheltered, as it were, by the walls of the house, and yet we could see what went on below us. patrol came along. There were Germans, there were Italians, and I think there were British POWs at the back, because the patrol was headed by a couple of German soldiers. Down the east side of the group of men were armed German soldiers. And in the middle, there was this, well, I would think probably about 40 or 50, looked like Italian men. Could well, I thought, have been a forced Labour Party being taken from Tosignano to do some work for the Germans behind their lines. Following the Italian party, there were a small group of about a dozen that marched in a more soldierly fashion, and I think they were POWs, British POWs, that they'd taken in Tosignano. And in the rear, there came up more Germans, armed Germans. Well, we watched them go past, and one of my troopers said to me, "Are we going for them?" I said, "Not likely with that lot. If we got rid of a few of the soldiers, Italians would go wild and we wouldn't do the job we were sent to do anyway." So we let them go past, memorised it so that we could report them back. We decided then we go to the next story up. We went up onto the next floor, and again the windows over the front looking down onto the road. So we posted sentries at the windows, and we went back into one of the main rooms, because this was a top story. There was a crummy old table in there and a few chairs, and that was going to be our headquarters. The two soldiers at the window facing the front had orders to let us know any sounds that they heard and if anybody entered the building at all, most important. Well, they stood looking out over the road down below, and they could see if anybody came. All went well, it was quiet, we sort of organised ourselves in this room, having any lights at all, but I'd get used to it, and eventually we could see around the room. We sorted ourselves out, we arranged for people to take over from the guards on duty, and all went well until, well, it must have been about midnight, I suppose, and the two, well, there was a chap on the stairs as well. He was listening for sounds on the stairs, apart from the two looking out on the road. And he came to him and he said, "I'm sure I'm near footsteps on the stairs." So I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "I'm sure there are steps." So I went out of the room with him onto the top of the stairs. I remember there were stone stairs with a ball straight down. And we listened. Go down to the next landing. Now there's another half space landing down below. We went down to that one, and then suddenly we heard footsteps coming up from the bottom. So we backed up slowly, got the other lads out with the Tommy guns ready in case there was anyone. The lads at the window said that they'd not seen anybody come in through the front, so everyone was coming through the back. Just at that moment, we heard the steps coming up, and there was somebody saying, "Mr. Martin, Mr. Martin." Well, that meant that it wasn't a German. So we should turn up round the corner but our signals sergeant, and he looked at us, and old Tommy gun pointing at him. He said, "You'd have willingly shot me, wouldn't you?" We said, "Well, you can't be too careful." Anyway, it transpired that the wireless set that he'd fixed was useless. Whether shells had damaged the lines, I don't know. But there was no way there was any communication. So he said, "I've been sent to let you know what's going on tomorrow when you come out of here." He said, "Because the line's dead." He said, "At 6:30, a barrage will start. And when that barrage starts, let it go for a short time, and then make your exit from this house and head back to our own lines. After 1/4 hour, the barrage will stop, so you want to be well out of it by the time the barrage..." after that, the next night. He then went back to the squadron headquarters. So we got our orders to move the next night. So we spent the next day there. Now, that night was a bad one because the Lance Corporal, who was my wireless operator, I didn't realise cigarette fumes had such an effect on him. His nerves went to pieces. He wasn't allowed to smoke anything at all like that. And being a chain smoker, it played havoc with his nerves. And he was really getting jumpy and on edge. And the corporal said, "We would have covered him before I finished. He wouldn't carry on like this." I said, "Well, I think the best thing to do, we can manage without him, get him to go and lie down in the corner and keep quiet." Which fortunately he did. And being dark, I think he dozed off. So we managed without him on guard duty. Had a big problem, he'd have to have come up, of course, but otherwise he was quiet in the corner. I wasn't very happy with the situation looking out at the front. We'd seen some dispatch riders going in and out of this big house. We'd noted it, the defence post where we'd seen soldiers. And the next thing, I thought, I wonder if we went into the house next door, we might see more in a northerly direction up the road. So we decided that at dawn next day we would start making a hole in the wall, because they're not very well built, and with a couple of old broken knives that we found there, we decided we'd tackle it first thing next morning. Well, when the dawn broke, we started making a hole through the wall, and a couple of chaps set to work on that, and by about an hour's work, they made a hole big enough to crawl through. Well, it was a waste of time, really, because we couldn't see any more when we got through, because there was no window in the gable. So we were still looking out over a sort of 45 degrees up the road. Obviously, we didn't want to expose ourselves, because some sharp-eyed character might have spotted us, and we'd be finished. So we watched. There was nothing very much to see. We made note on the maps of the areas that we had seen soldiers station, but there were only a few. They were more or less slip trenches as a guard post rather than anything else. We stayed there the day. We had a few biscuits with us, and I think some beans and something of that order, but we had very little food. We didn't want to carry too much. And we just observed what went on. We all seemed to be reasonably peaceful and quiet. By tea time, we got our stuff together and we were ready to go. And after dawn, the barrage started. I think it was around 6 o'clock or something like that. And it was due to go on for about 3/4 of an hour. And we were then to give the 1/4 of an hour and then make our exit. So that was about halfway through the barrage. We went out and we went along the pathway that we'd entered, climbed out through the window, which you go through the doorway, and went up to the track which led us back to our squadron. And as we went along, we heard a machine gun cocked. In order to get ready to fire, you pull the handle back and it's got a sound of its own, and you can't mistake it. We heard a machine gun cocked. Now, we were wearing a peak cap, a bit like the baseball cap that's popular today. The Germans wore them on patrol very often, those caps at night time. And I think there were some Germans in a house further down the block we were in. And I suspect they thought we were a German patrol going out, because we'd come from the German line, remember, past their house. And we heard this gun cock. And we just walked on as though we ignored it. And as we got way past it, and we turned off the track towards our own area, Corporal dropped back to me. "Did you hear that machine gun being cocked?" And I said, "Yes, I reckon that was a German in that house." And he probably thought that we were German patrol going out by our equipment. He said, "I'm sure you're right, yeah, but I heard it too, plainly from me." Anyway, we carried on. And on the way back, we heard voices coming from the road. So we all froze and dropped down. And we then heard familiar voices. It was one of our patrols from another house going out. And it was a chap named Care Elliott, actually, who was a patrol. And we just made ourselves known to them. because they were told to expect us on the way back. And we then passed on the information when we got back to the headquarters. We haven't seen very much other than that, and that's where we had spotted a few defence boats. But that was at night in the, just about in the German lines.
Now, the next incident on another time out was when you were actually on Penzola Peak itself.
That's right.
Can you describe that? Because that's the thing that was captured by the guards, brigade or division.
That's right, Penzola Peak. It's the highest point there. There's a picture of it in your book, taken from Monte Penzola. Now, that was the next time we went up, and we were all given locations, and I took my camera off, thinking that there'd be snow around. I was told there was some fresh snow. I put my camera in the haversack, intending to get some snow pictures. Instead of being in a house, I was given Monte Penzola as my defence post, right up on the peak, freezing cold, January, about the 5th or 6th of January, I think. We got up there, and it was terrible. The reverse slope, it was very steep. You got to climb up, there was guide rope to hang on to get up there. It was icy being winter, there was snow. It really was grim. The only place of comfort was halfway down this slope, on the reverse slope, the side we were on, there was a cave. And in there you could light a fire to get a bit of warmth and warm up some beans and stew and stuff. And it was a climb getting down there, I must confess, and getting back up again to the top. Headquarters put a hole in the top with a telephone in there, and it was about an inch of water lying in the bottom all the time, and that was headquarters. It was under a hole in the ground. There was a chap right up in the peak with a machine, a Gren gun, and his job was to warn us if there was an enemy patrol coming up. But I gather the Royal Engineers had put anti-personnel mines down over the front to stop them coming through. Well, that was our situation. We were on the reverse slope. If the Germans came over the top, we should fire up at them, you see, that was the idea. We made our slit trenches, which was a more habitable, more solid from a defence point of view, and cut out the wind a little bit because it really was cold, it should be all night in other places. In the cavern down below where we our fire. There was a mound of captured equipment at one end of it, a big cave. And I spotted a tripod. And it was a tripod for the machine gun, the spandrel tripod. So I said to a couple of the guns, I said, if there's a tripod here, they've gone here somewhere out there. We'd have to have a look for it. So they found it. It hadn't got the firing pin in the breech block. Nor had he got the breech block. But they said, well, when we're off duty, we will find it, because there were two boxes of Spandau ammunition there, unopened. So they found it eventually. They found the breech block and found the firing pin. Put it all together, oiled it, cleaned it, ready for action. Two boxes of ammunition and the tripod. Now, down in front of us, from our high peak, over there was a place called Aquasalata. It was another peak, and it was German occupied. And they had a Spandau machine gun there that fired across our front, down to an area near the River San Terno where the guards went out on patrol. Now, when they fired, it would be about 7:30 at night, they hoped to hit a guard patrol going out. One or two had been hit. And it had a beaten zone of about 100 yards diameter, a beaten zone. Anybody in that area at the time was a bit at risk. Well, now, this happened on a couple of occasions while we were up there. We were up there for about 5 nights. The first night, the machine gun opened up, and I got a bit annoyed to see all the traces going down in front of me, and I couldn't do a thing about it. So when we got this machine gun over the TV, I said, right, well, on the third day, we'll have that up to the top. So we got it up to the top. And we set it up between two rocks that were up there, and we'd spotted where the machine gun fired from, the German machine gun. So on the tripod, it's a beautiful tripod, it's got an anchor, you can lock it on a certain position, lock it for elevation. So we measured from the map the distance it was, and we set set it, aligned it up on the target, and we set it ready to fire at night. We did it in the last light of night so we wouldn't be seen.
Couldn't you have used a Bren?
No, not high enough firepower, not the range. Spandau was a very better gun for it. And given them their own ammunition back anyway. Because the Bren only got a small magazine, you see, and it hadn't got the range of power that Spandau got. So we got that all teed up, and we were ready to fire that night. Well, we waited and waited. And the mule trains came along the bottom, and the Germans tried to get them as well, because they put a few shells over. And suddenly the machine went open up. It was just like that, just a short burst. And I said to the gunner, I said, I hope that's not all they're going to do tonight. Anyway, I said, the next time it opens up, blaze away. And it gave a good long burst a few minutes later. And I stayed behind the gunners and I could see the traces from our Spandau going straight into the gun position. We were really lucky, we got it spot on. And at that distance, we'd have a beaten zone probably about 20 or 30 yards anyway. And we watched the traces going straight into the gun position. And then suddenly the gun stopped. And we finished up the two boxes of ammunition onto the position. And then we left it. Next day we got the gun away and down below. Just after we got the gun away, there was a hail of machine gun bullets came over. They roughly had an idea where it came from, so they got a machine gun handy. And a hail of bullets came over, but they didn't pass a little bit over our heads, fortunately. We got the stuff down, and from that time on to the rest of the time we were there, that machine gun didn't fire at all. So we obviously must have put it out of action.
Now, there was a bit of a comeback about that, though, wasn't there?
There was a comeback first. Not that it bothered me too much. We'd done the job we set out to do. But we were I've taken the gun away, and I said, right, can you put it on one side so that you don't have to go down this steep hill carrying that thing tonight? Leave it on one side and we'll get it down tomorrow. And my lance broker just came up and said, the phone's buzzing for you, so you better go and answer it. I said, yes, all right. So I went, the phone was ringing. The voice on the other end of the phone said, you're all right, George. The hell's going on? I've been trying to ring you. I said, oh, we've only been sending the Germans some of their ammunition back. Oh, in what way? What do you mean? He said, you don't know what trouble you've come to, you. I said, no, why? He said, haven't. He said, troops on each side of you have rung in to say that you've been overrun because they've heard a Spandau from your position. I said, oh, no, it's only us firing the German Spandau back at them. Oh, he said, what have you been up to? He said, well, I said, we've got a German machine gun which has been causing trouble to the guards. We spotted this position and we've sent them two boxes of ammunition back. And I'm sure we've knocked it out, it stopped firing, and it hasn't fired at all since then. Oh, he said, that's jolly good. He said, but heavens, he said, let me know, please, George, if you want to do anything like that again. He said, you wouldn't believe the trouble you've caused, not only here, but at our HQ. Brigade HQ and Divisional HQ, they're all standing too. He said, not that it would do them any harm to stand two now and again, but he said, everybody's ringing in saying you've been overrun. I said, no, I said, it's not that. We fired at them because we wanted to knock it out and give them an ammunition back. I said, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you ringing, and I didn't think to tell you. I didn't think it would be that important. Oh, he said, it'll be all right as long as you knock it out. I'll tell you, congratulations. But next time, just let me know, will you? So that was the end of that stint upon Pangola. Well, that was the last one we did.
What were conditions like up there then? I mean, it sounds pretty bad.
Grim. We got, you can see from the photograph there, we got the winter kit on. We were absolutely muffled up to the eyes.
What was winter kit?
Well, you had your ordinary battle dress uniform on underneath, and you had some woolly vests and so on, and all the rest of it. Thick socks, heavy boots, and over the top of your uniform, you wore what were really like a denim outfit. It was a sort of semi-waterproof, a bit hard and rough, and a hood over it as well, and you are muffled up round your face, and outside you put your webbing equipment on with revolvers and what have you. It was still freezing, your feet were frozen up there because it really was bitterly cold, and the wind was freezing as well. And you tried to find a position out of the wind to give you a little bit of shelter. At the same time, watch. That was the important thing. And I must confess that when 5 days were up, we were really glad it was all over. But it was really miserable. But the incident that we'd done gave us something to do, kept us occupied, and that you could, when in the daytime, go down to the cave down below, you see, and get a bit of water. But it was the night time that was better. It really was. And you have to be up on the top all the time at the night.
Now, when you got back to Bagno Arapola by Florence, that was it. Now, you got some leave then, I think, in Rome. What do you remember of that?
Well, I went to Rome. We were given leave because that was our last stint as infantry. And the next stage was to prepare to go over to the new forming up area on the east coast. Well, we were given leave, a number of us, and we went to Rome. I went with a chap named... Doug Orgill, and we went to Rome. We were stationed. Well, we were given a place in a rest camp outside Rome, quite a long way out. So we weren't awfully keen to have to trail out there after wandering around Rome. And it was a bit dead. So we found a hotel, officer's hotel in Rome. We booked in there for a few days, which was quite pleasant. And we went to one or two clubs. We had a meal there and had a sightseeing tour in Rome.
You took your camera, or you got a camera to do it?
I took my camera there, yes. I wanted to record. I like recording the places I'd been to, that was the main thing. There were no tourists there, of course. It was free and easy. You wandered around at will without hordes of people running around. And it was very enjoyable. We went and see all the big church in the Vatican and lots of others, the Roman remains there and all the rest. It really was quite fascinating. We enjoyed walking around, just having a look at the sights, that sort of thing. We had a meal in a hotel or a bar. We once went to the one or two sort of service clubs in the evening that we went to, and you could sit and have a drink and talk and that sort of thing. But we had a comparatively quiet time, and then I think we had, about 5 or 6 days there altogether, and then we came back. We went back to Bagno again, and when we got back, the sort of free and easy time had all gone. They were doing courses on this, that and the other, including enemy weapons too. That was another one. And then we were learning how to handle them.
What do you remember of that?
Well, they learned that the Spandau, Schmeisser, German hand grenades, how to strip them down, clean them, put them back together again. Which was quite interesting, really, so that if you found equipment, you could use it.
How did you think they compared to British weapons?
Some of them were a lot better. Spandau was a very much better gun, except that it got rid of ammunition so quickly, you needed almost a warehouse of ammunition with it. The rate of fire was terrific. It was a very good gun, very accurate, and good bang for it. It was a Vickers gun, which was a rather cumbersome waterproof gun. And I like the Spandau better. Schmeisser was a sort of machine pistol, which was very compact little thing. I picked one of those and had that in the tank. It had a slow rate of fire. You used to go pop, 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 instead of the brrr, which was the security. You couldn't mistake a Spandau with its rate of fire. You'd only got to hear the burst and you knew what it was. It was a killer, it was really. I didn't see much of the mortars that were being used, because it was mainly the small arms. It was intended that soldiers would pick them up and use them if they were wanting them back.